Welcome to Howling Talent, the podcast that sheds light on human and animal talents in all fields. I'm Anna Roy.
And I'm Yvonne Dagger. Let's get howling. This episode introduces our listeners to Caitlin Bradley. Caitlin is the Therapy Dog Program Manager for Canine Companions. Canine Companions provides highly trained service dogs for children, adults, and veterans with disabilities throughout the United States. Their therapy dog program is a fairly new program to Canine Companions. Caitlin has her BA degree in behavioral psychology, where she completed an internship with SeaWorld Orlando in the United States. Welcome, Caitlin.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. Caitlin, during your studies, you interviewed with SeaWorld Orlando in their research program. Can you tell us what that was like and what you learned from the program? Do you find that the program helped prepare you for what you do today?
Yes. So I think like a lot of college students, you aren't really sure where you're going in life, right? So after a few changes of my degree, I initially landed in psychology. I've just always been fascinated by humans and animals and the way our brains work and function. So when I was a sophomore, it was time to sign up for an internship. That was a requirement. And there were a lot of options on that list. One of them being SeaWorld, but all the others were in clinical offices and a bunch of, and I was like, SeaWorld, why is that on here? Like, it really like kind of threw me. And when I saw like the breakdown of what it was and working with the killer whales, and I've always been, of course, an animal lover. And that just, I'm like, what does this have to do with psychology and where I'm going? So that really led me down the path of behavioral psychology and becoming more involved with animals and the human animal bond. So I signed up for it. There was a couple different hoops to jump through in regards to interviews. There was drug testing, there's orientation, because you know you're working with these fascinating animals and you're getting close to them too. So I did the internship. It was actually, it was just one semester and it ended up going for two because I just loved it so much. And one of the primary focus was just a lot of the behaviorisms of the animal, specifically with calves, which is so exciting too, right? Little baby animals.
Wow. Sure. Wow.
Yeah. So there was a killer whale that was pregnant at the time. She was due and I missed it. Of course, it's one of those things that happens overnight. I would have loved to see that. But those first couple months, it had everything to do with the calf nursing and like, where's the calf going, from the left or the right? Like, were they primary? Because that is, there's a lot of molding that goes on with that. And then the brain, as far as if they tend to nurse on the left or the right side of the mom. So it all starts conditioning there. It's so interesting. But beyond that, just learning in general from healthcare, and SeaWorld takes amazing care of these animals. Absolutely. It's incredible. And oh, just
great
the
to
bond.
Know.
Yeah. And the bond between the trainers and the animals too. And I think it's really cool because I see the correlation now between our trainers with the dogs. These trainers knew these whales so well, kind of like how our trainers with our dogs, they know them so well. So their personality traits, if they're having a bad day, if they're having a good day, and you know, like humans, animals have off days. So they would know if there was a show going on, you know, this whale is having an off day. So just gonna, you know, let her do her thing, swim around, have fun for the day. You know, we're not gonna push them to do anything they don't want to do, type of thing. Oh, so just, yeah, it really
is important.
Very, very important. And it was great to just see that firsthand as well. So where I was documenting a lot of different behaviorisms, and I mean, I was just nonstop writing notes for about 4 hours. I just sat in a chair and at first I was thinking like, what does this have to do? But it was very helpful for them. And then just opened my eyes to a whole new world of, again, animals, behaviorisms, the bond between people and animals. So I do think it's helped me today just to better understand in general how that bond looks so different. And like I said, our trainers and how they know these dogs so, so well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in professional training, what path they're going to go down. Should they go to someone who lives on a farm or someone who, you know, lives in the city? That's a very different, very different dog. And they know that it's not just what the dog's skills are, but it's their cognitive, like actions, behaviors, all that too. And these trainers, they just know the dogs, and it's amazing.
that was very interesting when you mentioned about the whale that we had an off day.
Mm-hmm.
And the trainers knew that the whale had an off day. And mm-hmm. and it's interesting because sometimes when you do take your dog out or you're doing your work with your dog, and you can tell right away this is just not his or her day, you know. but how interesting that a whale and that the trainer mm-hmm. could sense that, well, you know, don't use him today. He's a little, you know, off.
Yes, exactly.
Like humans.
And we talk about that in therapy dog work, right? Like having an off day or something in the middle of a visit, like you just notice something off, and that brings the quality of the visit, and kind of like in the show, it would bring the quality of the show down because the dog's off, the whale's off, you know. So time to take a break.
You don't want to force an animal to do what it doesn't want to do. I mean, at the end of the day, they're still, you know, living beings that have feelings and have emotions. And
absolutely.
It's great that you've mentioned this because I do know, not only in the States, but a lot of places like SeaWorld do get quite a bad rap. So it's good to know that SeaWorld does care for their animals, genuinely cares for their animals. And they know what they're doing by the sounds of it. So that's great.
Absolutely. Yeah. From very, very important to just even having fun with them. They have a lot of fun. And I think that's an aside because it happens in the behind the scenes. Like there's a lot of play that happens. So whether it's, you know, throwing these big, equate them to like a big yoga ball, and the whales will volley them back and forth. They use these like high pressure hoses to give the whales massages too. Because it feels good. Almost like a fire hose because they're big animals. So that feels good to them. So they're treated extremely well. And like I said, just have as much fun too.
Mm. Did you just work with killer whales or did you work with other animals as well? Just the killer whales.
Yeah. Just the killer whales. So, and it was just, again, so interesting. I learned a lot from kind of like us when we get sunburned, how your skin peels. Same for them too. If they're on the surface too long, possibly, resting. And if you were to rub your hand on them, your hand has like a black tint to it because it's their skin peeling. It's amazing. I learned some really incredible things, and just how curious they are too as animals. Like when I'd do my observations from underwater, and that they would just stare at you, and they would just kind of, you know, just waver back and forth in the water and just watch you intently. And it was so interesting. It was so cool. So cool.
Wow.
That's great.
Do you do water sports? You mentioned underwater. So is it a hobby of yours?
Well, as a kid, I grew up actually in Savannah, Georgia. So we lived at the beach. So I was always on the boat, on a tube, water skiing. that's how I grew up. So I don't do that as frequently here in Florida because where there's water, there's gators. And that's a big fear. So I'll go paddle boarding and do things like that. But, those gators, they're their house. We're just guests in their house.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you've you've had 10 years experience in the world of nonprofits that serve people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. During the 10 years, what have you found to be the most rewarding and the least, and the most challenging or the least rewarding in doing this?
Mm-hmm. So before Canine Companions, I worked at another nonprofit local here in Central Florida called Give Kids the World. And it's an international nonprofit that's where children on their wish trip, for example, they come to Central Florida and they want to have a tea party with Belle. So they'll stay at Give Kids the World for a week, completely cost free. They get park tickets. They, all their meals are paid for. And the biggest thing there is you never say no. And one of their slogans, I guess you could say, is ice cream for breakfast, because what day could you have ice cream for breakfast? So it's 89 acres wide. And it just so neat. And so where there were, I'd say 300-400 employees, and I'm sure it's grown since then. There were 1800 volunteer shifts a week that were filled there.
That's incredible.
So volunteers truly do run the village, as we call it. So there's always a need because there's always family staying there. I'd say about 1,000 plus guests at any time of the families.
Wow. Incredible.
And so that volunteer need is always huge. Mm-hmm. And very interesting enough, I had met one of the kids that was staying there, or had previously stayed there, now comes back and volunteers, and he has a service dog from Canine Companions. So I had learned also about Canine Companions while I was an employee there. And I was looking for something to do volunteer wise outside of Give Kids World. Loved it as an employee, but you know, sometimes you got to volunteer somewhere else and, just have a little bit of a break. So that's where I found Canine Companions. I initially signed up for a volunteer and then saw the opportunity to possibly, become an employee there. And then I've really flipped the switch and now I do volunteer at Give Kids World, but then also work now at Canine Companions. And actually during COVID, I was able to, when the world was shut down and we weren't really sure as far as, you know, what our team trainings would look like to be safe. Mm-hmm. For our students, and airlines, of course, were stopping. So there were kids, they were not coming in from Texas. They weren't coming in from the UK because the wish trips had stopped because it was too dangerous. So here's this 89 acre property sitting there. And I had gotten in touch with them because maintained a really great relationship. And we actually hosted a team training there at Give Kids the World during COVID.
Lovely.
Yeah, which was awesome because it's the most ADA accessible place, I'd say, in the world. The founder there, he basically said, if you can't do it, then we're not going to have it. So everything from theme park rides to the pools to everything you can imagine, it is ADA accessible. So anybody can do it. Yeah, so it was like, it was the greatest place to have team training for our families.
Place.
Coming. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So I think, you know, with both of those and thinking about the different, clients that are served at Give Kids World and then also Canine Companions, the most challenging part is there's always a need and you always want to help and you always, whether I was, you know, on the clock and working, like I'd still want to continue helping after. And like, there's that self burnout too. So you're not really fully cognitively aware of that until you're like, wow, I fell asleep on the couch at 6 o'clock last night type of thing. Yeah. So I'd say that's the hardest part is because there's always a need and you always just want to help. Always.
Yeah.
There's the emotional strain of it as well, I'd imagine as well. You're dealing with everybody's emotions and it can't be easy. No.
The emotions run high because in both situations, anytime there's with animals, the emotions run high. So, you know, you're crying at graduation because of happy tears, but then also It's bittersweet when the puppy raisers are handing over their puppies, and it's like, oh, how could they do that? That's the number one question they get asked. So that's hard too. But then, and with Give Kids a World too, you know, knowing that these children are critically ill, some of them they're on what are they consider a rush wish, so they know they have possibly a matter of weeks. That's hard too. So yeah, it is a huge emotional toll, and something that I had learned from one of my colleagues there is, it's not your grief, you don't own it. So when you're there, you know, you're on. But when you're on your drive home, then you can have a little breakdown and cry. So I have carried that phrase with me, is, you know, not your grief, you don't own it. Through everything I think I do, work and personal. So and because we have a lot of that happens at Canine Companions too, with when dogs pass away, or you know, just traumatic incidents as well, which is something that we're exploring with our therapy dog teams. So that's definitely hard. So that's a great point, the emotional toll, because we don't think about that a lot, especially as staff members.
Is, you know, everybody sort of sees happy dogs doing their training, doing this, doing that, you know, social media, et cetera, et cetera. People forget that the people doing all this, there is an emotional toll, and it's something that I think is, it's important to be said, you know, very important to be said.
It really is, and especially when you have that kind of a I don't know, personality like yours, Caitlin, that you really put your whole self into everything, and that's where your heart, you know, your heart breaks every time things happen, and so it really does take an emotional toll on the
It's not just the
individual.
job.
It's right. It isn't. It isn't. Both of them are were not really just jobs. They were that was your heart. You put your heart and soul into both of them. I mean, even though you switched hats, you know, you took one hat off, the job hat off, and the volunteer hat, you still had that emotional connection and feelings for everybody, and you know, and you take it home with you. And you don't know really when do you take a break, or when do you say, well, this is like, it's not a 9-to-5 job, you know. You will fall asleep on the couch thinking of that individual or that dog that, you know, touched your heart that day, you know. But Canine Companions is the leading, they lead in the service dog industry, so their clients can live greater independence, as we always say, you know, with Canine Companions. And many other groups from all over the world use Canine Companions as their guide. In fact, Anna and I interviewed someone from Australia who knew of people who had come all the way to Santa Rosa, husband and wife, right, Anna? We were talking to her. She's an author from Australia,
She was
and
going to Canine Companions, wasn't she? As part
yeah,
of research
she
or
is.
part of
She
a
is
project
going
or
to be
something?
coming. She got a grant, and she's going to be coming to Canine Companions in 2025, I think. Anna, didn't she say that? But and so, but they came and they wanted to actually find out what is this all about, you know, because they had heard about it, and they went back and started their own program in Australia, and that's where this girl now works, and she loves it, you know. So but my question for you is, what makes Canine Companions and the service dog program so successful? I mean, you know, I know that they receive the dogs free of charge. And that is a big thing, because a lot of people have to go and raise the money to get their service dog. And many people who need service dogs can't afford and can't go out and raise the money for a service dog. So, but other than that, what does make them so successful?
I think, you know, I think it really starts with the breeding, especially. So with our breeding program for a good reason. So we've worked since the beginning. We've worked with over 26 different breeds,
Oh,
and
okay.
found, yeah, that Labs and Goldens and then the cross of
Right.
are the best breed for us just because of the clients that we serve and their needs. So just knowing, that a poodle is really not right, or a shepherd's not really right for us, because again of the clients that we serve and what our dogs are trained in those specific skills. So, starting with the breeding and knowing, what are some of those more prevalent diseases. Hip and elbow dysplasia is a big one, especially. So we truck litters from before birth, and that's why our breeders, they are the best of the best. They have to have the best behavior, they have to have the cleanest health certificate, but then following the puppies of those litters all the way through retirement, because oh gosh, did one get sick? Are they having liver disease? What's going on? Did one of them have hip and elbow? So then they look at all the other puppies in the litter. So it just doesn't end with okay, we place this dog in, or even the dog's release. That's why we take the release dog survey when they come out, because we want to follow them because it's so important to the overall integrity of our program. So really starting with the breeding. It really starts there. And then even like I was talking about at the beginning with our trainers and the relationships that they have with the dogs is so important in professional training. So our trainers go through a lot of training. They start out.
Take us through that, if you don't mind. It's very interesting.
It is. So they start out as instructor apprentices, and then they go through, they become one, then two, and then a level three, if we want to talk on levels. And they have to, as they progress from instructor, as they progress from like say one to two, they have to pass a series of in-person and then written exams. And that it's our program, but it's also under the Assistance Dogs International. So it's what we're following under their guidelines as well for them to move to that next step in their career path, so to say, as a trainer. So they might teach a dog a special, it's not, so our dogs are picking up dropped items, or turning on and off lights, or opening and closing drawers. But when an instructor goes from an apprentice one to two, they're teaching maybe a special skill. So let's just say they teach the dog towel. And that means if someone's in the shower, then they tell the dog towel. The dog gets the towel off the rack and brings it to them in the tub. So they have to teach a skill that's it is part of that retrieve, but it's just a little special, something extra. So that's basically how they go to that next. And then from going to an apprentice to an actual certified instructor, they have not just one dog, but they're testing with multiple dogs in public, special skills, again, written tests. So there's a lot that they're putting into it. And for them to become an instructor, it takes an average, I'd say about 2.5 years or so, could take three. Pace is very different. It's not a one size fits all. So, but at that point, that's once they're an instructor, then they have the ability to become a senior instructor. They can also segue into different things like our hearing program, PTSD. So those are very special skills where you're teaching, a dog an alert to someone that is deaf, partially deaf, or the PTSD is things like nightmare interruptions. So that's a very specific set of skills for that trainer to have, and to also find the right dog for those skills too, because that's a whole other thing. It's not every dog is a hearing dog. They have to be disobediently obedient, as we call it. So they know that they can break command because the microwave's beeping. So I got to get up, even though you told me down. I gotta alert you to that because something's happening. So they have to recognize what are those dogs that are gonna break command in a good way. So I think, you know, a lot of that, and then also just with the why so many dogs get released too, for a good reason, because it goes back to the integrity of our program. And if it's just the smallest little thing, just using myself and his example with my release dog Hobbs, he was in training, professional training for 8 months, 9 months, and he loves to work. Loves to work. He has all of his skills. But he's also very skillful in the game of keep away. So, yeah. So Hobbs was actually very uniquely. We work with some different prison facilities. So he was raised in a prison program for till he was about 8 or 9 months old, and then he went to a puppy finisher for socialization. And from there, and he did show all of those signs of keep away in the, well, in part of the prison program too. So they thought they worked it out, kind of started to come back. It was just, you know, yeah, peaks and valleys, so to say.
Oh
And yeah, so he was doing really well. He actually rotated through team training, but didn't match because he was also still having some issues with keep away. He was about to rotate a second time. So what happens is, if a dog rotates, doesn't match, then they rotate again to with a client, or with our group of team training students is our language for it. If they don't find that match the second time, then they are released. So we don't want to keep the dogs there longer than they need to. It's time for them to just live their best life as a pet dog. So it was a week before he was supposed to possibly match with someone in that team training, and he had a really bad incidence of keep away with actually a recall whistle that's used, where the trainer put it down and he saw his opportunity and he went and grabbed it and ran off with it. And they said, we're done, we're done. Because, and they thought, you know, could he be a great possibly facility dog? Could he be a great, you know, skilled companion? Because again, his skills are really great, but it's just those little small incidences where the trainers all said, even the training manager is like, he was a hard one to let go because he's so good. And I mean, he just still to this day, he's six, like he's on it. But you know, if you drop your keys and you're the only one there in the parking lot, you know, at night, you know, is he going to get him? Is he going to take off with him? Even though he's on leash, he's a strong dog. And
You
even
can't
with
risk it.
facility, exactly. And facility, if you're doing an exercise where, say, it's a rotator cuff and you're throwing the ball down a hall, if he sees an opportunity, he may not come back to you. He may say, oh, shoot, there's someone carrying a food tray that way. I'm going that way. So he was released. So it's things like that where, and it's hard. I know the puppy raisers put their heart and soul and, you know, sleepless nights into these dogs. So when they get the call that the dog's released, it's tough. But we just always say, just trust. It's for good reason. Just trust it. Because
Yes, of
it seems
course. I
like they
mean, you
always
can't,
seem to make the right decisions,
they
the
do.
dogs.
You know, they know their dogs. They know their strings. They call them strings of their dogs, and they know them real, real well. You know, like you know your children. They know their dogs, and every day, you know.
I mean, even visually, they know them too well. Like you could look at a whole, I'd say black labs are going to be the hardest. But you could look at a whole row. The trainer could have 10 black labs on their string, and now you look at it and you're like, what? Like, and they can go down the line and say who is who because someone has a little bit more of a narrow face, or maybe, you know, this ear is a little bit more upright than the. I mean, it is wild how they know their dogs, not just personalities, but visually. And like, I'm pretty good with the yellow labs. I can point them out because they might have a pinker nose or they might have had a bigger blocky head. But those black labs, those are hard. And the trainers know.
And they know them. They know them. Well, they're
They
their babies, aren't they, at the end of
are,
the
yeah, they're the babies. So,
Oh.
yeah. And they, you know, the trainers put so much love into these dogs too. And I tell puppy raisers
They
that,
do.
like, they're not just training. They'll, you know, have a whole like grooming day, and it's cuddling. It's, you know,
I
it's
know.
grooming that. So they love them like they're their own.
They really do love them. And a lot of times I've heard this, that a lot of times they love their dogs so much and they want them to succeed and they want them to get to graduation. But they have to be objective.
They have to look at their emotions
and whatever, however they feel that they love those dogs, you know, each and every one of them, they have to take that out of the whole equation and they have to say, okay, you know, I understand that he likes to play keep away. I understand that. And there's nothing that's going to make him recover from that.
Yeah. And they try their hardest, but
they really do.
You know, how much more of your time? It's worth the trainer's time too. You know, they have to be fair. They've got 10 other dogs on their string or whatever it might be. So they have to put as much attention into each one of those dogs too. So it becomes a, you know, what do we do? And sometimes they'll bring other, you know, does a dog change trainers? Maybe there's someone that works better with Goldens because they're a very special personality too. So they'll that trainer might have more Goldens on their string just because they get that personality a little bit better.
Yeah.
And I think again that's why the program is so great, is because we do know our dogs so well. We have our trainers are just incredible too. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
What sort of disabilities do you cater for? So if somebody's looking, you know, has something specific and they need a dog, what sort of things do you actually cater for?
There's a great, I'd say, spectrum of different ones, but the more prevalent cerebral palsy, there's a higher percentage of our clients with cerebral palsy or those that might be quadriplegic as well. So I think there's over 63 plus different disabilities that we serve.
Wow.
But
amazing.
Yeah, so mostly, again, it's going to be dogs that are able to assist with tasks such as picking up those dropped items or pushing the push plates on a doorway. But so things like that we don't do guide dogs. We work with guide dog organizations, but we do not provide dogs for like seeing eye dogs or dogs that do like diabetic detection. Those are different.
Those are medical.
Balance. We don't, our dogs are not for balancing either. They're just all over as far as the different disabilities that our organization serves.
And the PTSD program is so wonderful for the veterans. Yeah. It's just such a great, great program. And that's, that's fairly new, right, Caitlin, the PTSD program?
Yeah, it officially launched in 2018. And so it's not rolled out to every region as of yet. So kind of like our hearing dog program, it's not in every region as of yet, but you can travel for like hearing dog, for example, if you live in Texas, even though they don't have the hearing dog program, you could go to our Southwest region or to the Southeast region, just a couple different outliers there.
There are different regions throughout the United States.
So we have our 6 regions. We got Northwest in Santa Rosa. Southwest is in Oceanside, California. So beautiful there. And then our region in Texas, which is in Irving, which is a little outside Dallas. New Albany in Ohio, of course, in New York. And then Orlando, Florida. So our 6 regions. And Northwest, since it's our home base in Santa Rosa, it is they do PTSD, hearing dogs, service facility. They do them all there. But each region does have, like in Orlando and Florida, we don't have the PTSD program. But in New York, there is the PTSD program and vice versa. So, and we'll eventually all get there. But you know, the part kind of like the therapy dog program, it's a slow roll because we want to make sure that we're doing what's right in the program and we're learning along the way.
Dogs stay in the States or have any, gone abroad?
Nope. They stay in the States.
They stay in the States.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, 55% of the dogs become working service dogs. So what happens to the others that get released?
So puppy raisers, like I said, those puppy raisers put their heart and soul and blood, sweat, tears, sleep into these dogs
Everything.
for while raising them. So they always get first right of refusal, always. If they don't want the dog back, maybe they have too many dogs in the house. Maybe they are, they just want to be puppy raisers and they just want to raise, and that's the only dog they want in the house, whatever the reason might be, and they don't want the dog back. There's two paths. So they either will go to our general release list, or the trainers also have a lovely little box now with our therapy dog program that they can check off and say that the dog is suitable for therapy work. So they will go through trainers, like we said, know the dog very well. So is the dog solicitous? We want them to be solicitous for attention. That's a good thing in therapy work. Do they love interacting with people, children? How are they with surfaces, with noises? And it's okay if like loud noises might freak them out, or and they take a while to recover, and it's okay because we might have settings that are appropriate, like a private practice, for example. So trainers will say, yep, great for therapy work, just might do better in a library versus a hospital, something like that. And if that's the case, if they're good for therapy work, which means absolutely no aggression history at all from the time they were puppy to even in professional training, then they come to our program. And what we like to kind of call puppy bachelor in a sense. So it's finding getting a dog and finding the right person on the list, depending on what they want, first of all, for those that are on our list and what settings that they're interested in. And then we match the dog with them, and they get it to do a 2-week home trial. And if it works out, awesome, then they can adopt. If not, then it's okay. Their place stays the same on the list, and we'll find the next best dog for them that makes the most sense. So, the dogs will continue on, whether released, to have maybe a career in the therapy world or just be a sunbathing couch potato.
That's
But,
funny.
either way, they still make an impact on the people's lives that they're with.
Of
So,
course. Of
yeah.
course. When did the therapy dog program for canine companions begin? When was that?
It officially started at the end of 2019, like November or December. We had our very first certified team. And then I say this lightly, it took off in 2020, which is a weird year to say that, but it was very
Sure.
slow. Very, very slow. So in those first 2 years, basically, just again, learning about our program. And it just started out in Santa Rosa, again, to know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, what do we change, what do we keep, what do we tweak a little bit. It's grown exponentially, obviously, since then. We kind of figured out our sweet spot of things, and now we're not across the entire United States, but we're slowly expanding in every region now. So
That's great.
we probably had like 15 teams in 2020, but then like last year we certified 104 teams, for example.
Wow.
So
Wow.
we've kind of found, like I said, that sweet spot, but we're still being careful with not growing too fast because there's still so much to learn. Of
Sure.
course.
I know for myself, I had the pleasure of meeting you, Caitlin. Through my own interview process of becoming a therapy dog handler for canine companions, and I have to say it was a very extensive, wonderful. It really was a wonderful process that I went through, and well worth the studying and all of the things that I had worked towards to become a therapy dog handler. It was well worth it. It wasn't one of those fly by night kind of things. You really had to work hard. And we adopted Picasso about 7 months ago, and one of the and of course he was flagged as he would make a really great therapy dog. And I had applied before then.
to be a therapist handler of canine companions. That's Barney, my rescue dog. If you hear him in the background. But one important criteria was that I had to bond with him. And that was really getting back to that bonding of the whales and the, you know, at SeaWorld and stuff. And at first I thought, gee whiz, I feel bonded already after 2 weeks, you know, I'm bonded already with him. But you know, the program is so on target, on the mark. They have it all figured out. That 6 months is really, really needed. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really needed. I know that the written test was exciting but scary to take. I'm glad I passed it. but that the 6 months that we needed to bond was critical to the success, our success. Because every dog is different. We were talking about that with the trainers and the strings and all of that. And we started our therapy work. And we got certified and we started our therapy work. And I am just over the moon excited about continuing and everything that all of the whole program has been well thought through, and it's right on the mark. It's really right on the mark. And I believe that the therapy dog program is successful because they know what they're doing. They've followed a examples of other things, and the way that Canine Companions raises their dogs to become service dogs, I think that is all part of the whole thing. So,
oh, definitely.
Yeah. So I'm really pleased about what we're doing right now, too.
Yay. Well, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
You and the therapy program are also recognized by the American Kennel Club or the AKC. They've been the leading authority on all things dogs for about 139 years now, from what I've read. And that's a huge accomplishment, being recognized by them. Can you elaborate a bit on this?
Sure. So one of the biggest things is that all of our soon-to-be certified teams, they have to go through the Canine Good Citizen test, or what we call the CGC. And all of our evaluators, so we train all of our volunteer evaluators too, they have to become AKC Canine Good Citizen evaluators, mm-hmm. so they can administer those tests during the therapy dog certification process. But taking it a step further, they're also now able to earn titles if people want to earn titles with their dog. So they are evaluators if they want to do that too. Obviously not a requirement in our program, but if they would like to, they can earn those different titles.
What sort of titles do you mean?
So there is, like, they don't just have to pass, well, you have to pass no matter what, the Canine Good Citizen right. test, but you can go on. There's one that's called the Urban Canine Good Citizen test. So with that, you can, it's basically a step higher, but then the dogs have to, there's just different test criteria that has to be passed then. But then you can also get like the certificates with, you know, you hear those like really long dog names sometimes too. And that's where some of those titles come in, and getting a fancy certificate too. So since that is one of our criteria, our guideline for our certification process, that's where the AKC recognizes. And I think they love having our program too, because sure. we have a lot of 83 now evaluators coast to coast. So that have signed up wow. through the AKC mm-hmm. to become an evaluator with them. So we're sending them some business in that way. Yeah, and
Great.
Then all of our evaluators have to recertify every 2 years under the jurisdiction of the AKC to keep that certification.
Wow,
so,
that's wonderful. That's
yeah.
really great. You know, very often I meet people who really don't know the difference between a service dog and a therapy dog. And do you educate people, you know, by knowing the difference and the etiquette with, you know, like approaching a service dog and what access each one of them has? Could you explain that to our listeners?
Yeah.
Worldwide,
no,
by the way.
What's that?
Worldwide.
Yeah. That's a great one to bring up, just because that is, as you know, Yvonne, a big part of our therapy dog manual too. We do talk, it's not just about therapy dogs, but it is about being advocates for our mission, which is providing service dogs to those adults, children, and veterans with a disability. So we don't ever want to gray those lines at all. That's our mission. This is just a really neat piece of our program to continue to spread our mission. So with that, we are, if not the even bigger advocates than our clients, for service dog fraud access and being mindful of that. And that's why we are pretty rigid in the program as far as making sure that there is approval to every location that they go to. It's not to micromanage it away or be nitpicky, yeah. But we want to be sure, because going into a hospital, for example, is not pet friendly. So the hospital granting you access, you're not just showing up. We're very careful with events that talk about our mission or the therapy dog program, because is it appropriate for therapy dogs to be there? If not, then they shouldn't be there, because we need to, you know, be very mindful of, like you said, Yvonne, with, you can't just approach a service dog and, oh, it's so cute, and, you know, fluff their ears and scratch them on their head. A therapy dog, you don't have to ask. Now, is it good etiquette in general? Can I pet your dog? Of course. You know, mom always taught me that. So, but you shouldn't have to ask. They're their therapy dog. You know, you should be able to go up and give them a big hug, or, you know, give them a little scratch behind the ear. But service dog, it's always nice to pet, but you shouldn't. You should not ask. Even that dog is working. You should ask if you really want to, but the dog is working. That vest is on, especially in public. So that's something that we talk a lot about and just are very, very mindful of when we're doing events, and then also when our therapy dogs go. And if they're not actively providing therapy work at a setting, then they don't need to be there. Even our canine companions events, we have our signature event in all regions called Dog Fest. Yes. It's dog friendly. You should absolutely go with your dog. But is it a place for therapy dogs to go in their vest? No. But they can go without their vest and still they're a pet dog.
Yeah.
Through and through, no matter what, they're still a pet dog. So they should go, but they shouldn't wear their vest. There's no reason for them to provide therapy there. They should just go and sniff around and see their friends and be a real pet dog release dog.
So basically a therapy dog is only allowed to go where it's been invited to go.
Correct. Yeah.
And then the service dog, I guess by law, can go anywhere with their client.
Correct.
Well,
depending on what country you're in, because service dogs here in Cyprus are not always welcome. Even if you think that they, you know, they should be welcome somewhere, they're not. So again, it just depends on what country you're in.
That's very interesting, Anna.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Well, service dogs here are a fairly new thing. And people are getting better with it. However, you know, they're not allowed in certain government buildings. They're not allowed, you know, they're not allowed in hospitals. They're not allowed in any medical facility. Some restaurants object to dogs going in, even if they are a service dog. So we you know, there's still quite a few issues that need to be ironed out here.
Which
is very sad. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, as you say, somebody has a service dog because for a reason, they need that animal.
Right.
But unfortunately, we've got a long way to go. I wanted to ask you, I assume service dogs are also trained to ask for help if something happens and they need help, or not, if something
Like
were to happen to their, to their handler.
Oh, like the service dog could get help.
Yeah. Would are they trained to ask for help or not?
No, they're not trained, but I will say it is one of those things that just ends up becoming second nature with a lot. I've heard of this a lot, just because, like,
Okay.
maybe where the person has fallen and they go get mom, like, or, you know,
Right.
go get rich, you know, like, so, and the dog, they learn. So it,
Or,
I've heard that a lot, and the dog will go find that other person in the house.
Or so if in the public, maybe they'll just go and start indicating to somebody around that the person needs help, or
probably not. They usually will just like sit with the person. Yeah.
Okay.
But what they will do is, like, if it be, if like their phone, so the dogs will retrieve like a phone, for example. So if you need to call 911 or whatever that might be, you know, they could definitely
they'll
retrieve
do that.
the phone.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah.
Now,
that's
these
one
are
of the
therapy dogs, right? You're talking about the therapy dogs, or are you
service
talking
dog
about service?
Service
Oh,
dogs.
Service dogs. Well, I knew someone who was had gotten trapped in her. She had her wheelchair, and the hair dryer that she was using got trapped in the wheel of her wheelchair. And her service dog, all she kept saying to the dog was "fix," which is a command. And the dog kept pulling the wire around, and they worked it out where the dog really actually fixed the whole thing for her, and she got free. It just isn't incredible how they, you know, they know these different commands. They know over 50. What is it, Caitlin? How many commands do they know? Do our canine companion service dogs know?
Oh,
over
service?
55?
Oh, yeah, 55 plus for
Over
sure.
55 plus commands. So, and one of them is fix. And she never had to use that before, but when she got stuck in that wheelchair, she used that command, and he got her right out of it. And it was really cool. I mean, she shared that story with all of us, which is incredible. But they're really remarkable. They're really remarkable. So.
So what advice would you give somebody who's interested in becoming a therapy dog handler?
With us and Canine Companions, or just in general?
Either or.
Both. Well, I think the biggest thing is, you know, knowing your dog, if you already have a dog, and where they would do best. So, you know, if they can be around like a high traffic area with lots of noises and machines, like a hospital, or if they would just thrive better in a reading environment that's a little bit low key, like a library. So just knowing your dog for sure is very, very important. And then if it's not a Canine Companions dog, you know, going to the AKC's website under their recognized organizations and selecting one of those. Some are widespread, some of them are just by a specific radius. But there's other ones on there like Pet Partners, Love on a Leash, that are I know those nationwide organization. So checking out those. And then with Canine Companions, for us, like, we have on our website, under our main website, you can just type in therapy dog to learn more about the program. If you have a dog, it talks about, you know, what steps you would take if you already have a dog, or if you're interested in adopting a dog, there's more information under there. But just knowing that you're not only taking on another living thing, you're taking on a dog and adding to your family, but also it is another job in a sense with the therapy work. Because one thing that we want to know, you know, these are amazing, amazing dogs, and they've had a great foundation and a lot of training. So when we're for those that are on our wait list, we want to, you know, make sure that they are 100% on board and they are doing the work. So part of our release dot contract when they are released from our program is committing to 5 years of therapy work
Right.
at minimum. So because again, we know these are amazing dogs and they have so much to give and the community. So and again, we know them very well as far as if they're great for therapy or not. And like Yvonne said, with the bonding process, and just some people are frustrated by it, like, oh, I know the dog, like you said, 6 weeks. Yeah. Oh. But then, you know, that second month hits, that third month, and you're like, oh, this is new. So I always say, trust the process. I promise it's for good reason. You discover things about the dogs. They go through kind of like people. So the dogs go through different fear stages in their life. It's an adjustment getting used to a home.
Yeah, of course.
When I adopted Hobbs, he became out of nowhere, no rhyme or reason. In his first 6 months that I had him, because we also got certified through Alliance of Therapy Dogs. And in that first 6 months that I had him, he became afraid of small dogs and cats. No reason. He didn't have a bad encounter. It's like he had a bad dream and woke up and all of a sudden just is like, he'll scale the wall on the other side there. But nothing happened to him. I'm with this dog 24/7. Nothing happened to him. So it is
just decided to wake up one day.
Just don't know. You just don't know.
Yeah. But I learned that while I had him and, you know, in those first couple of months. So it's the weirdest thing, but these things happen. And that's why it's like, just, I promise, trust it. Just trust it. Be patient.
Yeah, I know. You really do think that you know them, but then after a couple of months or you do something, you take them on a walk or you do something. You go somewhere even in your house and you recognize some sort of a fear they might exhibit or something. And then you say, wow, okay, now I really understand why they need me to bond with me for 6 months, you know? And
then you learn your dog too. So it's like learning that, you know, maybe Picasso acts in a very specific way that only you know when he's stressed out. You have to be able to recognize those signs and then be an advocate for your dog too. That's the most important thing for therapy work. If they're stressed out, if it's not the right day, they're having an off day, right? Or it's someone maybe just set them a little off, just being that advocate and, you know, it's time to go, or you can make up an excuse if you want, or just knowing it's time to cut the therapy dog visit short, or maybe it's just not a good day to go in general.
So exactly.
You're your dog's advocate.
and that I learned that with Dagger Dog Vinci. He was a therapy dog for TDI. And I Yaya too, my other release dog from Canine Companions for TDI. If I saw his eyes open wide or his ears go in a, you know, go back, I knew, okay, it's time to exit and to say, we'll be back at another time, you know? So, but you are their advocate and, you know, they'll do anything that you want them to do. They're so beautiful. And especially the dogs that we have, you know, they're just so beautiful. And knowing that they were checked off to be a therapy dog, they saw the trainer saw something special in them, maybe a little quirk, you know, here and there, and that's why they were released. But they saw something really special in them, and that, you know, that's, and so they'll go until they'll fall flat on the floor, you know, and they'll do anything for you, but you have to make the decisions for them. And I learned a long time ago that I'm their advocate, you know, and, but besides, Hobbs, your certified therapy dog, do you have any other pets?
I have Stanley. He is a 1-year-old golden retriever.
Stanley.
It actually was because of a foster that I had from Canine Companions. I was just fostering him while he was in training, and I fell in love with the name. And I was also I knew I was going to be getting a golden soon. So he's my pet dog. He's not part of the Canine Companions program. Because I just want to keep him forever and ever. So, So he's my little spunky 1 year old. I love Goldens. Hobbs is a full lab, but I love the beautiful golden personality. And I lost my golden in 2022. That was my heart dog. And I just, life just has never been the same after I lost her. So I was like, I need another golden in my life.
How old was she, Caitlin?
She was 13. And it was a week after her 13th birthday. And I always say, you know, that dog was not supposed to live past 13. She was, she had a lot of health issues since she was young. And I can't believe she made it to 13. I can't believe she made it to six, to be honest. Aww. So she had autoimmune disease. You name it, she went through it. And, but I would have, you know, if giving her my kidney would have saved her life, I would have done it, you know? Mm-hmm. So
sure.
Well, it's credit to you that she lived as long as she did.
That's yes. Right.
Yeah. That's she, I'll keep this very, very short, but just really cool. So she, I loved Hobbs when he was in training, and I'm like, you know, I knew his puppy raiser didn't want him back. I loved him. I was like, I want to adopt this dog if he's released from the program. And, you know, I hope he makes it, but if not, he's got a home with me. And sure. I found out he was released, and they said, all right, you know, basically he's yours, take him home. And I said, let me have one more night at home with Sadie. It's been her and I for 11 years. Like it's just been us girls. So went home, got really excited, did my shopping, got a new dog bed and some dog bowls. And then, you know, had a little come to Jesus talk with Sadie that we're, you know, I'm just going to have a brother now. So better knock that only child syndrome out. But went to bed, and around 11 o'clock, she started vomiting. And that wasn't unusual. I told you, she has a lot of trouble. You know, I was like, oh, she probably ate something. Like, she just always had a sensitive stomach. So, but it was just nonstop. And then she became really lethargic. And I thought, oh, here we go. The autoimmune is kicking back in. We'll write it out. We'll go to the vet first thing in the morning. And come 7 o'clock, like I had to basically lift her into the car, and I just, something else was going on. And I was just in that, you know, fight or flight mode. And I didn't even cry. I was just like, got to get to the vet. You'll be fine. I know what you need. But I had found out later that day that she had been internally bleeding from a tumor in her liver. And they gave her a weekend to live, basically. She was 11. I told you she'd passed away at 13. So yeah, but it was, long story short, she's a fighter. I took her to a holistic vet. We did a lot of Chinese medicine. I cooked for her for 2 years. Her cancer was actually shrinking. My vet, he's like, I've been doing this for 33 years and I've never seen cancer shrink on its own without treatment.
Wow, that is incredible.
The power of food and these Chinese herbs and medicine and everything I was doing with her it was actually a lipoma that ended up getting infected, and it wasn't even the cancer that killed her. So I was very happy to say that. Wow. If anything,
incredible.
But the coolest part of the story, I think, is that, you know, when people are anxious to get a dog, I always share that story with them. They're like, when am I going to get a dog? When am I going to get a dog? And I'm like, the right dog will be released to you at the right time. I promise. And I tell that story because it was just very, just serendipitous, very divine intervention. And I said, oh, you know, God knew what he was doing in my life, because the day that Hobbs was released and I adopted him was that same day that Sadie got sick. And I was like, it was the light in the whole situation. And so I said, trust the process in that way.
Wow. In so many ways, to trust the process.
Yeah.
Like trust.
The right dog will come for you. I promise it will.
Exactly.
It always does.
Exactly. I know Anna lost her Tipper. Tipper was 20, right, Anna?
He was a poodle, but yeah, he was a miniature poodle. But yes, he was 20 years old when he passed. I'd had him since 6 months.
Oh,
so that
That's
was
amazing.
Our last Christmas lesson.
It's a long
but I have a
time.
very similar story actually about dogs who are determined to outlive themselves. I used to work in rescue and I did a lot of fostering. And I got a call one day about a dog with cancer, and they were like, oh, he may have 6 months to live, et cetera, et cetera. He needs to be in a home rather than kennels and all the rest of it. And I thought, okay, well, 6 months, you know, I'll do what I can for him, et cetera, et cetera. So I brought him home, took him to my vet, same thing, you know, actually, you'll be very lucky if he makes it 2-3 weeks.
Yeah.
5 years later. he passed away 6 years later. I mean, it was just one of those things.
Yeah.
And you're sort of sitting there going, you were supposed to be dead.
Yes, I get it. I get it.
Just keep going.
Yeah.
You know,
like, I'm so glad you're not, but what in the world?
Yeah. I mean, you're sort of preparing yourself emotionally that this dog isn't going to be here.
Yes.
And then you just kept going. But when they want to, you know, when they can keep going, they keep going. That's the amazing thing.
Right.
They give
amazing.
Up only when it's just too much.
It is amazing. It's an amazing thing. And the thing is that the loss and the grief that we feel is real. You know, it's really real, and it never really leaves. There's always that part of your heart that is for them. You know, it's that part that's for them. And so you know, you honor their lives and think about the great things that Sadie brought to your life. And and then now there's Hobbs, and that's a great, that's great. And your other sweetheart too, you know.
Yes.
How did Sadie and Hobbs get on, considering that she was, you know, on her own for so long? Once you actually go back home, how were they?
Yeah, they were good. They got along. They didn't really play together because he also, I think he knew, right? He knew her communication, her age.
They sense it.
And she was playful right up till the end, but she liked to like tease with toys, but she didn't like, she's like, don't play with me, but I'm going to like tease you from afar to come play with me. And so he learned that. He definitely learned that. But now these two, Stanley and Hobbs, are playing. They play all the time. Sometimes I have to break it up. So I got him at, you know, an 8-week-old puppy. And then so this is his, and I call it his emotional support Hobbs, because he cannot be without him. Like, he has to be with him.
That's adorable.
So
cute.
That's his Hobbs. And kind of, but someone gave me a stuffed animal of a golden, and Stanley doesn't tear up toys, but he loves his toys, his plush toys, which is, I'm not used to that. Sadie would rip hair. I mean, she broke 3 teeth from ripping up her toys. He doesn't do anything, but his favorite toy is this plush golden, which is not a dog toy, but he loves it so much. And I call it Sadie Dog, and he loves his Sadie Dog.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
And if you tell him, go get Sadie Dog, he goes and picks it every single time. Every single time.
That's adorable. That's really
adorable.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Very, very sweet. You know, and you know, I know you live in Florida, and and we always vacationed in Florida. That's where we went to vacation. So of course you live there, so it's not a vacation.
Yeah.
But do you go any do you like to go away on vacation, or and do you take Stanley and Hobbs with you when you go?
You know, sometimes I have one of my best friends. She lives on the West Coast, which is nice, in St. Pete.
Oh, yeah.
And she lives right on the water. So and she has a release dog that's now a therapy dog. I may have nudged her a little hard for that one. But she's very happy to do it. She actually does therapy work now at John Hopkins, all children's, which is lovely.
Lovely.
But I visit her with the dogs which is on the water there. So I take them, but otherwise, usually if I go away, it's on a cruise. So, because cruises are very close to here, which the
Yeah.
port's maybe an hour and a half, and they give Florida
Sure.
discounts. So that's nice.
That is nice.
But yeah, beach. And I haven't brought Stanley to a beach yet. He is a water dog through and through. So I said, we'll do a beach this year now that you're officially one.
Oh, that's great.
But I get, you know, I get so weird about like dog parks. I don't take him to dog parks.
I don't want to.
I worry about the beach and the way like, oh, there are going to be other dogs there. I don't trust other dogs. I just don't. Sadie was roughed up at young at a dog park. The
Oh, really?
diseases that go on there too, with like an RSV that was going around not too long. I just,
Yes, I know.
So
Yeah.
rough. I have a hard time with that. So we'll go to a
Yeah.
beach at some point. Hopefully no one else is there.
Yeah. Yeah. Go early in the morning sometimes, or
And then,
something like that, you know. And do you, I know you had mentioned that you love to train your dogs to do different tricks. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've done with them and
And so go back to knowing your dog. So Hobbs is very food motivated, very. Stanley's not. He's very verbally. If I tell him no, or he's sleeping right here right now, but if I call him a bad boy, like he's very, very sensitive to that, and he will just shrink and
Oh.
shut down.
Oh.
Like, did he wake up when I said that? He's that sensitive to it.
Wow. Wow.
So when I train
Oh,
them,
poor
I have
Stanley.
to, sometimes Stanley will take food, sometimes not, but he's just as happy getting a, oh, you're a good boy. That's it. And amping him up. That's all he needs. So when I train them to do some fun things, I still need my bait bag, but more recently I taught him how to hug. So Stanley will go up behind and just say,
Oh.
hug, and he'll go up behind Hobbs and do wrap his arms around him.
How cute. That's adorable.
So, or I ask him, who's your best friend? And he'll hit whatever dog is next to him, basically.
Oh, that's
Sometimes he
so
hits
cute.
me. But it's just fun. I love seeing like all the light bulb moments turn on with them. So like really, it was taking a simple command as shake, and then every time I'd shake, I'd move my hand towards Hobbs' head. So poor Hobbs gets bumped on the head all the time. So just pairing those two together, and then eventually, it just became who's your best friend, and he just bonk.
Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah,
That
and
is
then I saw
adorable.
him jumping up a lot instead of the just hitting. So that's where I was like, oh, this could be a cute hug. Like, so I turned it into hug, and now it's a command that he knows. So,
That's brilliant. Wow. That is
Cool.
fabulous.
I know. I'm always trying to think like, what are some other like fun, we call them dumb dog tricks. I'm like, they're fun dog tricks.
Yeah, those are fun dog tricks. I mean,
Plus, you
they're not
turned
dumb.
something that him jumping up, which could have become an issue, you turned it into something positive, which is
Wow,
very
that's cool.
yeah.
Yeah.
From jumping to hug. Exactly. That's so,
Exactly.
so true.
Wow. Good
Yeah.
point.
So,
Good point, Anna.
yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, I don't know. So, fun stuff like that. And Hobbs, of course, does wave, and he loves that during therapy visits, and especially if people, because he's a big dog too. So, excuse me. So people can be kind of put off by the big dog size. So I'm like, that's fine. We can just sit from here, and you can just wave, or spin. I taught him to spin. I don't. It's so
Oh.
easy and nothing like crazy, but people think it's funny. So I tell him spin, or if I just say dance, he'll just spin in circles.
Oh, how adorable. Oh, that's great.
Good icebreaker.
It's a very easy one to do. If you just take like kibble and just, that's all you have to do. Make them follow your hand and
And
say
wow.
spin or dance, or I also thought about saying get dizzy. it...
Oh, that's great. I think I'm going to use that when we go to the
yeah,
schools with
do it. Yeah, and
the kids.
he'll paint as well. So
Oh,
I.
really?
Yep. So he'll
Good.
paint. I've given him the paintbrush. He's done a few. He actually did a few pieces for the Tails and Tails Gala.
Oh, that's fabulous.
And We've also done the peanut butter art, which is, you know, that's like the cheap.
Yeah, the licking.
But it's made some really cool things.
It really has. Nice. They really, I know I did that with my rescue, Barney, you know, because he doesn't, Picasso, I'm teaching him how to paint. So he's been doing very well at it. But wow, that's interesting to know. We have to keep that in
very
mind.
Good for us to know when we're going to have our next canine art exhibition.
Ah, there you go.
We do have art exhibitions that we'll keep you informed about.
Oh, definitely. He'll do a piece. It'll look, you know, it's so much style and flair.
That's wonderful. Oh, good to know.
Yeah.
and as far as you know, creating and crafts and all of that, we understand that you like to cook. So what is your favorite dish to prepare?
That's a tough one. I really just love holiday baking. It sounds tough to say, but I like to just, one in general, when it comes to cooking, I just like to just see what I have and just throw things together. And honestly, it doesn't always come out great. Usually it does. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty good. And just very simple things, but holiday baking is fun. So I have an older brother, a younger sister, and my younger sister always comes home for the holidays. My brother's out in Denver and he has a family and harder for him to come home during the holidays. But my sister and I will make cookies almost every single night for like 2 weeks. We'll do like a staple, you know, your usual, but then we'll always try to find a recipe of like something different and still like our usual stuff, like thumbprints and cherry shortbread. Nice. That's a really good one.
What is it?
Cherry shortbread and almond cherry.
Delicious.
Shortbread. Oh, that sounds good. You're going to have to send us the recipe for that one.
Yeah. I think just, you know, love the holidays and then just that time with her, my family, and you know, and who doesn't like cookies? So
it's the truth. It's the truth. I like cookies.
And I will bake dog treats too.
You do?
I do.
Share that recipe as well.
Yeah, it's very simple. Usually I have a few, but it's pretty much three ingredients and that's it.
And we'll put it on the website.
Yes, definitely.
We should have a little cooking part of our website.
That's a good idea.
That'd be fun.
Good idea, Caitlin.
That'd be fun.
It would be a lot of fun, especially during the holidays.
Yeah.
Bake off, you know.
Oh, yes.
Ooh, there we go. Are there other things that you enjoy doing in your spare time?
You know, that's kind of like
spare time. It's not to say you're ridiculously busy.
I know. It sounds boring. And you know, this sounds
not
kind of
boring.
I love cleaning. It sounds weird, but I just love to clean, and because I have two dogs that shed a lot, and then foster a decent amount of dogs from work just to get out of the kennels during professional training. Last week I had four dogs here and but there's a lot of hair. So I love to clean. I love doing things in the yard too. So the backyard,
that's nice.
Planting things and being outside in general, even though it's pretty so hot here. It's 90 degrees every day already.
Oh,
so.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same. I love gardening and cooking and so on too. So
getting out,
that
working
sort of
with the
brings
earth.
The level down.
Oh, for sure. And just stepping away. Like I have my Apple Watch and I'll turn off notifications and I just gotta step away.
Very important.
Oh, it really is. It really is. And that's part of the creating process too, because you're creating with your hands. You're using your hands to till the earth and then when you see these things cropping up out of the soil.
I did that.
And the flowers, and you say, wow, I was part of that creation, you know, which is it really is great. It's like the way I feel when I get to my canvas and I start to paint and I lose myself in it, you know, and it's just great. It really is.
Yeah.
So, I tend to plant a lot of herbs and vegetables as well, which delicious. I then use in my cooking. So that's a good incentive to experiment in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's fun.
Right. If we didn't have so many bugs here, I'd probably do the same thing. Someone more recent, where was, oh, I was out in California for work and I was buying some wine and showed my ID, of course. And they're like, oh, you live in Florida. It's like Jurassic Park there. And I'm like, I have never heard it explained so well. Yes, it is. We've got everything. Yeah.
Oh boy.
Oh my goodness. Oh
yeah.
boy.
Oh. So, yeah. I'd love to have a garden, but there's just so many bugs and creatures and
right.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
I
well,
know.
Can you have an herbal garden in your kitchen, like a little, you know, just
oh,
buy
like
a
with the
couple of
light.
pots
Yeah.
of those organic and then clip
In,
off some basil or yeah.
Oh,
Yeah.
definitely could have indoor. That would smell really good too.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's really
And
nice.
it's good for the dogs as well. Sometimes they tend to self-medicate on herbs if they need something.
Oh,
yeah, that's
I'm
true.
simply doing that. He loves to eat
Oh,
grass.
well, that's
Yeah.
great.
So, how can our listeners find you on social media or canine companions or even you yourself if you've got your own Instagram or?
So we have, so of course, go to our website, www.canine, and that's canine spelled out, canine.org, to learn about our mission in general, but then also more, if you're interested in the therapy dog program, just type in the search box therapy dog, or there's a drop down that says service dog, and under service dogs, there's just a bunch of different categories, one being therapy. You can learn more about the program there. There's some really great FAQs as well.
Nice.
So we also have our own social handles on LinkedIn, on Facebook, and then Instagram as well. So we like to, on Thursdays, especially highlight our therapy team. So we're calling it hashtag Therapy Dog Thursdays, where we'll feature stories, whether it's a volunteer or it's just an impactful story that we may have from a handler. So we try to do that at least once a month. Last month was National Volunteer Appreciation Month. So we had a story every Thursday, which was
very
wonderful.
Nice.
We love to celebrate our volunteers and the awesome work that's going on out there. Plus it helps us share the program. So,
and the handle is Canine Companions.
So on both of those, on both, Facebook, or well, I guess all three,
Instagram.
Facebook, LinkedIn, and, Instagram.
Instagram.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, and then you can see those stories. It'll also link to the website. And then I have an Instagram for Hobbs and Stanley. So and that's it. It's called Retrieving Hobbs and Stanley. So yeah. So I think I was like, I don't know if I put I think I might have some of Hobbs therapy dog work. So we did like Toys for Tots delivery last year and try to go to fire stations, hospitals. So there's a few visits that we've done. I don't know if I'm like, I don't know if I've had them just because you just have to be careful with taking photos and who's in them too. And
yes, of course.
So
yeah, that's
why. And or I'm just, you get so in the moment, as I'm sure a lot of people doing therapy work, and you don't even think about taking a picture. You're like, oh, it's so cute. And then you're like, oh gosh, I wish I took a picture.
Taken that.
But you're just so immersed in it. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That happened to me the other day. We were at one of the local elementary schools. We had visited their kindergarten classes. We went to four different classes and from one classroom to the other. And one of the teachers was taking a bunch of pictures, but photographs, but the same thing happened to me. I got in the car and I was like, oh no, I didn't take one photograph of any of this, you know. But it's hard to you know, navigate everything but I did tell them, if you can send me some of those photos that you took, you know, and we'll
definitely.
And I said Canine Companions always likes to put them on their,
yes,
you know, the other social media sites and website and all of that, and it's really a nice thing, you know, to have people see that and to see where it's heating up for us. I mean, we're getting, you know, calls from all over the place. Can you come to us? Can you come to us? So
that's awesome.
Really nice. It really is. It's
what's
really
your favorite place to do visits at?
I really do love the schools. I really do. One of my one of I don't know if you could say it was my favorite, but it really had an impact on me was going to one of the local high schools. They sent us to the social worker's office. And what I did not know, and I now know about Picasso, is that when we went into the office and he gravitated towards this one girl who was sitting off to the side smiling. And the other girl sitting next to her was crying. And I thought, oh, that's the one he should go to. But he didn't. He went to the girl that was smiling. And when we were all done, the director said, I want to walk you out. So when we were walking out, she said, I can't tell you how like that girl needed that so badly today. And I said, oh, I'm so happy about that. She said, no, you don't understand. She really needed that today. And I didn't want to know what it was. It's none of my business, but it just felt so good to me that Picasso recognized that or had that sense to go over to her and not the girl that I thought he should have gone up to, you know? Yeah. So, and that's the beauty behind all of this is that you do, you know, like you said, trust the process, you know, it is a process. And, but my favorite place is with children. And he loves children. And that's the whole thing. He just loves them. Even when he hears their voices, like his ears go up and he looks, you know, and he's been so good. Wow. He goes to church with me every day and he has been so good. I mean, it's just been a really wonderful thing. So, you know, when one door closes, two windows open. No.
Definitely. Yeah.
So finally, Anna, you want to ask?
Yep. One final question then. If you were an animal, what animal would you be and why?
Well, I got to say it. Probably a golden retriever.
Why not? Excellent.
I don't know. I just feel like I kind of radiate that energy. I relate with the breed a lot.
Well, they're beautiful dogs. So
I know. We have the same color hair. No. Yeah, I'm already halfway there. No, my brain flickered for a moment. And I said, oh, shoot. Do I say, because I'm fascinated by killer whales. I always have been. So that was another thing that why I really wanted to do that internship too, is because ever since a child, like Free Willy came out and I was like, what is that? That is a beautiful animal. I've always been fascinated, but there are so many crazy things in the ocean. I just don't know.
It's a toss up between a golden retriever and a killer whale.
Go figure that. Being like the top predator in the ocean to like the most like goofiest.
Oh, that's wonderful though.
Yeah.
It's great.
Too many scary things. So we'll just go with the golden.
good. Yeah. They're so happy go lucky.
yes, they are. Yes.
They are.
Yeah.
Caitlin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It's been so informative and enlightening, and it's been an absolute pleasure to host you, and we look forward to the next time.
Definitely. Thanks for asking me to be part of this. This is awesome, and I'd love to come back. So
Good. We'll love to have you back.
Sure. Yeah.
So to our loyal listeners, thank you once again for joining us. Remember to tune in to our podcast episodes on howlingtalent.com, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Until next time, everyone, take care.